Hey, I'm Roberta Blevins, and this is Life After MLM, a podcast where we work to end the stigma of failure in an industry systemically designed for you to fail. Join us as we dive into the real-life stories of survivors, experts, and advocates to debunk the common myths and fallacies of cults, scams, and multi-level marketing.
Hey, Hunbots and Hunbros. I'm speechless. I know that doesn't happen that often. You guys listen to the show, you know, but listen to this. The last couple episodes that I have been doing have garnered so much attention from you guys. I know there's a few of you that message me or comments or like, but I have gotten so many messages and emails since we started talking about the purity culture episodes and sort of diving deeper into these topics that are a little hard to discuss, but we're trying to discuss them in a nice way. I am just so unbelievably floored by the emails that I've received in like the last 2 weeks. You guys are incredible. I'm getting back to you as soon as possible. I'm setting up my scheduling link. Check your email. It's all in there. And I know I extend it all the time, and I know that there's like a submission form, but to be perfectly honest, like I'm so busy that half the time I can't even get to that submission form. So if you really want to be on the show, just email me. Just email me and be like, Roberta, I've tried every other way. I'm finally just emailing you, and I will get back to you soon. I'm telling you, it's definitely the squeaky wheel over here that gets my attention. but it's really incredible. So the whole point of all of that is to say that I have so many really cool new perspectives on some of these stories that we're telling to give us different views from different sides and to sort of piece these stories together, because so many of these topics that we talk about, people don't talk about them. And so because we are, there are so many things that are flooding to everybody's mind as we go through these episodes, being like, oh my God, this happened to me, or I remember this, or wait a second, I knew somebody, or even the one I got today, oh my gosh, you talked to somebody who I know, and I have more to add to that story as well. So just really cool stuff. So I want to say thank you to every single person that feels inclined to open up their email app and shoot me an email. It's therealrobertablevins@gmail.com. It's not too hard. I'm pretty easy to find. But I really want to say thank you, because it's really cool, and I cannot wait to go deeper into some of these topics and to just dive. And in saying that, I want to let you know that today's episode is a heavy episode, but it is a hilarious episode. And I feel like the only kind of people that can tell horrifically horrible, hilarious stories are cult survivors. And so I am so excited. I know I have been singing the praises of shiny, happy people for weeks, but I am so excited because this episode is with Tara and Floyd. I adore them. They are so cute. And it is just a really, really interesting story, because although they're both connected, they have very opposite stories of how it all came together. And it's really interesting to get both of those perspectives in the same conversation. And if you really loved this episode and you want even more from Tara and Floyd, there is like almost 40 plus extra bonus minutes on the Patreon of this episode, because Tara and Floyd actually do an exclusive Q&A for the Patreon members. So it's really fun if you're really into this. This might be the thing that pushes you over the edge. I also want to let you know, I think I mentioned it before, but I don't even know what day it is half the time. We're revamping the Patreon. And there's going to be new tiers, and I'm going to try to provide as much content in as many different price points as possible, so that if you want the bonus content, it's not going to break the bank. I also want to welcome our newest Patreon members to the family: Hannah Mansmith, Sarah Van Tassel, Molly White, Jamie, Rashad Austin, and Jeff Morris. Thank you. We've got the book club going on. We've got new episodes of Hunberta. I'm really trying to like revamp the Patreon and, you know, make it a more fun place. So I really, really, really appreciate everybody that's joining, you know, and stay tuned. Like I said, we've got new stuff coming up. And that being said, this episode does dive into some pretty heavy topics. Some of these topics are just exclusive to that Patreon Q&A. But again, we're talking to IBLP survivors. It's pretty heavy. And these are the possible topics that may come up in our conversation. We don't really go into depth into too many of them, but they definitely are mentioned and are at least a topic of a few sentences in our conversation. So obviously IBLP and ATI, that's the homeschool, Bill Gothard comes up quite a bit, but also SA and pedophilia and sobriety and addiction. We have suicidal thoughts, pregnancy and infertility troubles, feminine health issues. I mean, it really runs the gamut. But if you watched Shiny Happy People and you thought, you know what, I want to know more about Tara and Floyd, this is the episode for you. I also want to say, if you're a fan of Arrested Development, you're probably going to like this episode. Lots of pop culture references this week. And then I wanted to mention, because Rashad, one of our newest Patreon members, actually commented on one of the posts in the Patreon and kind of updated and gave me a new link about the Borgs that we talked about in the purity culture episode and about how they can be kind of dangerous if you're not paying attention. He was actually a part of this really horrific thing that happened. And so he shared the link, and I updated the link in not only the show notes on the Patreon, but also just the regular show notes as well. So if you want to look into that a little bit more, I want to say thank you to Rashad for sending me that link so that I could update that, because, yeah, dangerous. I feel like anytime you just throw a bunch of alcohol in a big jug and drink it all, it's pretty dangerous. So thank you for the updated information. And again, you guys are incredible. This has been another amazing week. If you didn't catch the after show that I did with Amazon Prime Video, I know, isn't that wild? If you didn't catch that on YouTube, the link is in the show notes. You can catch the after show. And if you were there during the live chat, thank you so much for showing up when you could and supporting. You are incredible. I will see you next week. Enjoy this episode. I know you're going to. Welcome back to another episode of Life After MLM. I am so excited. I know I've been talking about this documentary for like weeks, and I know I told everybody I was going to be doing content, but it's actually happening. It's happening right now. And we're going to do some Shiny Happy People content. And I'm starting it off with, I'm going to call you guys my friends. I feel like we've talked so many times that we're friends. Tara and Floyd, welcome to the show. It's so great to see you guys.
Thank you so much for having us. And yes, you are absolutely allowed to use the label of friends.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Anyone who's gone through this process with us is now considered
friends. Yes. Trauma bonds.
So we're trauma bonded besties.
Yep.
Oh my gosh. So for anybody that hasn't watched the documentary yet, I don't know what you're doing. I don't know how many times I've told you guys to watch it, but fill everybody in a little bit of what the documentary is and how you're portrayed. And then we'll get into some actual questions I've prepared.
Well, one of my favorite things to lead into conversations when I meet new people is, I was raised in a cult. And that is what the entire documentary is. Well, not the entire documentary. It's kind of hovers around the story of the Duggars, 18, 19 kids and counting.
Yes.
And the insidious, dark ideology that bore that family
into existence.
Literally. Yeah. And we were both a part of it
to a certain extent,
in one degree or another.
Right.
And
Floyd was definitely more involved in the entire
ecosystem. People need to stop saying umbrella.
Yeah, no, we need to get umbrella. Yes, it's very triggering for these IBLPers. But the underbelly of what created the Duggars was a man named Bill Gothard. And he had a ministry that was referred to as IBLP, or the Institute in Basic Life Principles. It was...
Just go watch the documentary.
Yeah, I mean, that'll definitely... If we're having to explain it this much, it's
pause, go watch it.
Very captivating. Yeah. And it was so beautifully done. It was such an honor to be a part of it.
I think one of the most interesting things to me is, like, this isn't a church. It's like a seminar. It's like a lifestyle, like a way of being.
Yeah. I mean, I look at it, and maybe it just feels more natural to me because it was kind of a part of the homeschool community, like, as a whole.
A lot of bleed through into homeschooler conservative culture and the things that Gothard taught through IBLP. So it gets annoying saying ideology, but that's really what it boils down to, was this guy's bizarro world and his teachings. And you're right, it wasn't a church. It's not its own religion. It piggybacks on top of whatever anybody's already got. And that's, I think, one of the things that made it so insidious. People weren't nervous about, well, I'm a Lutheran, I can't go to a Methodist church, or
It allows for a crossover.
Yeah, it's non-denominational. So it feels non-threatening until it has its hooks in you.
I mean, but even as like, because Roberta, you're not the first person who has said that, you know, it's so strange. It's not, you know, it's not a church. It's not a this. And my brain goes, yeah, but it's a ministry. And that's what, like what a ministry
it's
looks
deeply
like.
Deeply religious.
But because I like put myself in your shoes just now and I'm going, oh, well, that because of the religion aspect of it, you're going to go, oh, this is a church. No, it's not a church. Oh, okay. Then what is it?
Yeah. It's like a supplement to church.
It's your vitamin IBLP. Oh, you just, God. You take it four times daily and say your prayers and you're good.
You got to choke down those horse pills four times a day?
Apparently, yes.
If I'm quiet, it's because I'm reliving childhood trauma in real time. Yes,
but I want to say that, so Floyd and I were both homeschooled.
Well, I was homed.
I was homeschooled.
Yes.
Yes, Floyd was home. I was homeschooled. That is our little bit there. Mm-hmm. But his family went for it, hook, line, and sinker, IBLP. Oh, yeah.
We went to all the conferences that we could. We went to multiple seminars. Went to Knoxville yearly. I had siblings who participated in a bunch of the programs. I went to Russia with IBLP. Was there for a couple months. I took part in the first class of Verity, which was their college, not a college.
You went to Mexico.
And went to Mexico. So
yeah. And for me, I was homeschooled, but we never joined ATI, which was the homeschool group that fell underneath IBLP. We did.
We all had all the materials.
Though. We had quite a bit of the materials. Like we did the character sketchbooks. We also did wisdom booklets when I was younger. And then I do remember going to a couple of conferences, but
probably the seminars.
Yeah. But at the end of the day, my parents could never sign on the dotted line because you were expected to give up your TV. You were expected to, like, there are just these different things in life that came along with it. Now, did everyone follow those rules to a T? No.
Certainly not.
But my family was unwilling to lie about it. And so they never wanted to, you know, commit completely. My mom would always say that Seinfeld saved me because she didn't want to give up like watching TV. Seinfeld. Like she didn't want to have to. Yeah.
It was a nightly ritual in their home.
Yeah. My parents really loved that show.
It played at 6:30 on NBC and it was always on.
Yeah. Well, it saved me.
It saved you. Not enough.
No.
I watched Seinfeld with my dad, like religiously. My church was Seinfeld, but yes, like watched it religiously with my dad every week. Yes.
It's ironic to me because for these people that have these deeply held convictions about morality and civility, that is not Seinfeld. Like it is irreverent. And I mean, maybe not by today's standards, but by then it was vulgar.
Oh my God.
But man, God bless them for loving it. It's hilarious.
Oh, Seinfeld. And Roberta, at one point when you and I were on a video call, I think it might've been our first one. Was I mistaken? Did you quote Arrested Development?
Always.
Okay. You are my favorite in the whole world. Yeah. Seinfeld and Arrested Development. You are perfect.
It's astonishing that you can say anything that isn't sarcastic.
Oh, I always say, I'm like, I'll tell people English is my second language. Sarcasm is my first because that is just
true.
Oh yeah. Oh, yeah. And it's because of Seinfeld and Arrested Development.
Yeah. If I can throw in an Arrested Development quote, especially a really obscure one, I will. And I think what I said to you, we were talking, exactly what I said to you. We were talking about what to expect when being in a documentary, because it was a couple days before the documentary came out. So we were talking about what to expect. And I had a couple of you guys chat before the documentary came out to just talk about the experience. And what to expect, right?
Right.
And I said to you, talking about trolls, I said, you're going to get some hop-ons.
That's here's the thing. When you said that, I asked you what you meant by that because I couldn't believe for a second that you were actually quoting Arrested Development. She is not talking about the stair car right there. That cannot possibly be left her mouth. Okay. Yes. But
yeah. Anytime we can throw an Arrested Development quote into the show, it happens. It happens often. We'll say like illusions, Michael. That comes up a lot.
Oh, illusions. Or I'm like, hey, brother. And the other one.
Mono.
So I think Job is my all-time, because Will Arnett is just like a perfect gem of a human.
Mr. Banana Grabber, you know.
Oh my gosh.
Why would a banana grab another banana?
There's always money in the banana stand, Roberta.
Tricks are something a whore does for money, Michael.
Or candy.
Oh, yes. God. Oh, God. Oh, my gosh.
Oh,
okay.
Oh, so I don't yeah.
know left off, so, though.
Yeah. So I thought it was funny you're wearing a Seinfeld shirt.
Yeah, yeah, right.
We're talking
right.
about it, and it's like,
it's
what?
Just a it's part of the backdrop.
Yeah, there we go.
Forgot.
It just yep. goes in. So, you know, let's talk about the making of the documentary, and then we'll yeah. get into this gateway into Fundy Hell and okay. talk about being homeschool kids, because I just, okay. you guys are just so cute. So tell me, and I already know because I did a documentary with these
it.
People.
Right, right.
And I know. So tell me what it was like being in a documentary and what made you guys decide to participate.
Well, I would say that it was one of the most like out of body experiences of my life. For
it was
one.
Surreal.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. How pretentious is it if you quote yourself from a documentary? Because that's what he just did there.
Well, look here. I'll tell you this. I don't know if you guys have GIFs yet, but I hate it when other people use my GIF, but I GIF myself all the time.
Oh, that's hilarious.
And I have one that says, it's a lot. And so I'll put nice. That on people's stuff all the time.
Yeah, that's funny. Floyd's GIF. Joke. Floyd's GIF is surreal. Yeah, so not obnoxious at all to throw that out
it
there.
I'll allow it.
Absolutely. Yes. Though how I feel about it, because you know I've gone my entire life struggling to explain to normal people the experiences that were normal to me that no one else understands. And now we're sitting in front of a production crew with cameras and lights pointed at us, and they're asking detailed questions like, oh my God, like they understand.
They not only understand, they care they use, to know what the answer
is. They know
is.
The lingo. I don't have to explain who Bill Gothard is or what IBLP stands for because they already know all of these things. And that's why I said surreal, because it was.
No one ever knows, you know, he's had different jobs over the course of his life, and he'll say on a regular basis that he knows with confidence when he walks into the room, like, I have the most traumatic story here. Like, I am the way I am because I could beat you all in a yeah. comparison game here.
Yeah. Or I'll just randomly say something really awful about my parents, and people will be like, oh, you can't say that. And then like maybe a year later, you know, a little bit of my story comes out and they'll be like, oh
yeah, this makes a lot more sense. Floyd's apparently really in it for the long game, though. Let them think that you're a monster for a whole year. That's a
yeah, because then they feel bad. Then they really feel bad.
Guilt is really deep.
That's right. And if there's anything that somebody who went through IBLP understands, it's guilt.
Oh yes, and shame. Yes. Yes, yes, yes. So I don't know what you were a little more accomplished and like just with what you were doing when you went into your documentary. And we were sitting on a couch at our house, and then we were sitting in chairs in front of a, you know.
Well, there was one important step in between that, which right. is we had just watched the Lula Rich documentary, which was phenomenal.
Yes.
And if anyone hasn't seen that, my God, you're really under a rock.
Right, yeah.
Now you've got like 8 hours of television to catch up.
I know.
Well, and I'm really disappointed in you.
Yeah, Mary, right. you're here listening. Too. I think you need to just quit your job and devote yourself.
Sick. You don't have to quit.
I went nuclear.
Yeah, no kidding. Dear Lord. So we had just watched Lula Rich, and it was excellent. It's one of the things that she put on like in the background, and then I stopped working
oh,
to
yeah.
watch it.
I do this on purpose. I will
to see
be
what
like,
will get my attention.
Will it bother you if I put something on and I'm just like in the kitchen, just like, oh yeah, he's in it to
yeah.
win it now.
And I was.
He's watching. It, this is great.
So that was great. And then randomly, we saw an article.
He says randomly, but Google is alive and well and was aware of our immediate.
Fine. The algorithm
yes.
told us that
yes.
there is going to be a documentary about IBLP. And I was like, well, finally. And in it, it mentioned it was the same people who did Lula Rich. I'm like, dude, instantly back on Google.
Yes.
Found the production company, found the there's not a lot of contact info, but there was one little
yes.
email at the bottom of a footer page. And I emailed them and I was like, hey, by the way, I did blah, 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 blah.
And he spelled out, like, the email wasn't ridiculously long. I was very impressed. Like, it was just very well thought out. And it was just like, here's the bullet points of what I bring to the table with my story.
I'd love to talk about it if you guys are looking for people.
Because at the end of the day, he's one of hundreds. So
thousands.
Okay. And it's...
There are dozens of us.
No. Yes, dozens. It just felt like, you know, we want to support you in your mission and in your cause, but it was almost a joke, Roberta. Like, it was almost just like, well, wouldn't this be hysterical? Like, if they actually would want, because when you compare us to all of the other phenomenal humans in this documentary, many of them have an audience and a voice. And you are talking with two people who just, that wasn't a part of our dynamic.
Yeah, we're literally no one.
No, like I've got like 8,000 people on my TikTok now. Page right now. And I'm right now. And I'm like, oh my God, this is crazy. But yeah, I'm so honored for those 8,000.
3-4 weeks later, before we heard a response.
Yeah, it was December of 2021. And I think within a week we had a response.
Okay.
Because approximately
it felt like 4 weeks.
Yeah, approximately 3 weeks later, 3.5 weeks later, we were filming.
Yeah.
And
so they reached out. We did a Zoom interview and they're like, come on up.
And the crazy thing about it was we sat in this very spot right here.
Floyd put this is our interview.
Yes,
corner,
this is,
which the people on the podcast can't see.
But... No. But we sat down and I sat down next to him as I am right now and was just here for support. Because again, my family didn't sign on the dotted line. We didn't walk that exact path. But I think there was, because I do have homeschool experience, because I'm very well versed, not only through Floyd's story, but through my own, you know, fundamentalist upbringing, that I kept the pace and was, I know the lingo, I know the lay of the land, and I have my own stories too. Well,
and as we went down this, the more we talked about it, the more overlap we found, like stuff that you had either repressed or hadn't talked about or never drew the connection. She told me this story once. Well, we went to this really weird VBS one time and I was like, okay, you know, like what was it like? And well, all the parents were in one room and all the kids were in another and they had to sing songs and there were character qualities and we wore these sashes and they had buttons with animals on them. And I'm like, dude, that's a children's institute. That's literally an IBLP seminar that you went to.
And I just didn't, we didn't go to enough of it for it to have obviously sunk in that that's what happened. But I called my mom and I was like, did I go to a children's institute? And she's like, yeah. Oh, okay. So I did have a little bit more involvement than.
And they were pretty quiet when we started dating. Like the day I met her mom, she's like, so I heard you know Bill Gothard. And I was like, yeah, he's an evil, sadistic piece of garbage. And she's like, oh. And that was like it.
So, oh my God.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh my God.
Well, what was it like? You know, you go into this and then what was it? How did you feel when you were done recording after you had gotten everything out on camera and told your story? What did that feel like?
It was very emotionally draining. I a little shell shocked because this isn't stuff that I talk about on a daily basis. Some of the stuff I haven't talked about in years, but having laid bare my life and experiences, I was hopeful that they would be able to use it some way to
further
help
the
people.
Cause. Yeah. Help.
I keep saying this needs to be drug into the light because it will die in the light. And if anything I said can help that process, then it's worth it. And that's why I emailed them initially. It's why we agreed to go and talk. And it's, I think for both of us, it's been the driving force through this whole thing.
We weren't so like pompous when he wrote that email that they would need us, but we just wanted to extend this like hand of saying, listen, if this helps you further this dragging it into the light, please utilize this story. And so it's very humbling and just, I was so proud of him. And knowing this man, what I've stood beside him and the path that we've walked down and seeing it come to this like full circle moments where we have been homeless, we have been penniless, we have been jobless, we have lost everything. And to be sitting there, him having reached a point of being able to work through and see the trauma and understand the impact that it had on his life, like proud isn't a strong enough word. It just, I would love to go back to 8 years ago, Floyd, or 10 years ago, Floyd, and go, you're never going to believe this. But all of this right now is going to be for a purpose. And just hang in there.
And I can say with absolute certainty that they could have gotten anyone to get up there and pontificate like I did. I mean, the clips they used is mostly backstory from me. But one of the watching, and we've watched it a couple of times now, one of the most meaningful parts to me is watching her face through this. We sat there and we kind of saw it happen, but to see it on screen and the pain and the heaviness of it is something that only I think you, Tara, could have brought and did bring And we've already heard people remark on it and say, recognize it and identify with it. And
because even without, I think every single person in this cast brings something so unique and beautiful to it. And I never want to be like an imposter, you know, because we've got these people who like, you know, they worked at headquarters. They went and did this ministry and did this.
Bill Gothard's feet.
Right, right. Yeah. And shoes.
Maybe feet. I don't know.
Oh, God. And while I do have this insight into it with the little bit that my family did use, I do have my own fundy backgrounds that was so heavy.
Yeah.
And it really did nearly kill me. Yeah. That's just like, I don't know. I want to be the face for the people watching that documentary who maybe sit down to watch it because, ooh, the sensationalized cult. But then they're like, wait a minute, you know,
I recognize this
was a little bit of part of my upbringing. Wait, my church utilized the umbrella of authority, or, you know, that head of the households, the men are always in charge.
Patriarchal.
Yeah. And even though I didn't walk the same path as everyone else, I was still incredibly damaged by the same ideology. Yeah. Whether that was something that I got specific through Bill Gothard or from the churches that were, you know,
mimicking
it was still something that as a child deeply conditioned me.
Yeah.
Also, just to piggyback on the question, I don't know, like how much to.
Yeah.
I'm still in.
Let me say this.
Okay.
Halfway through filming, or at some point during the filming process, I mean, we have been at it for hours, and somebody was like, oh, maybe we should take a break for like
that was
5 minutes.
That was me.
Oh, yeah.
We were in the middle of it, and I kept thinking, for sure, they're going to like pause because breakfast feels like it was a long time ago. And finally, I was like, I hate to interrupt this very poignant question that you've asked, like this important question, but like, did I see a Clif Bar upstairs? Like, and can I go grab it and like inhale it really quick? And then they're like, oh, like we've been sitting here talking for 5 hours.
Yeah.
Yes, please, let's take a break. You know, it was just like, everyone was so in it that it wasn't like they weren't feeding us. It was just, no one thought to eat. We drove down the street before, like we got there a little bit early, and there was no parking on the street in the house that we filmed. And so we had to park all the way down the block, and we parked and we're like walking up, and we're like, they had given us a different address, 'cause I think that they were just trying to get us to the general location. And I'm like, I don't think that's that. I think the house with like the freaking umbrellas and the light and the
swarm of grips working on lighting. And yeah,
it was, that was like, we like the air got sucked out of my lungs.
Tell us about your experience.
No, it's
right.
Yeah.
It was crazy. But we took a break and we walked out of the house and down to our car just for, and back as a breather. And on the way there, Tara turned to me and said, I'm terrified. If my family ever sees this, that they'll never talk to me again. And I have been on and off with my family for years. Fuck them. they all know my siblings and I are on good terms. My parents, meh. And I've got nothing to lose in that regard. And her family has been her world and really our world. They've been the only family we've had consistently through this.
That's what I had to lose.
That was the risk that we came to that table with, and she brought to that table. And I think that's where you were starting to go.
Yeah. I still struggle with a deep-seated desire to protect them. And just, I don't want to ever represent my upbringing as being anything than what it was. And I will say to any Joe Schmo who asked me that I had a beautiful childhood, like I do not have the horror stories of the people that were raised in this. However, even with that, even though I have never and would never say that like I was raised in a cult.
I reserve that right.
Oh my God.
I think what you're trying to say is your parents had, even I struggled to say this a little bit, but I'm just jaded. They had good intentions. They thought they were doing the right thing.
And I don't have the stories that the other people, I mean, I, again,
right. They didn't beat you to the end of the day saying this is for the best.
Right. No. And it was, yeah. And my dad was never like the powerhouse of authority. You know what I mean? He was never looking for any of this to use to his advantage for like manipulation or something like you see in all the other stories. I think that my parents deeply love their kids. And from their Christian perspective, were utilizing a plethora of tools to educate their children in the ways of the Lord. And as a result, the problem is, as the oldest and being the personality that I am, whether they were grinding it into me or not, I accepted it as like Bible,
gospel truth.
Yeah. And it became a foundational, you know, aspect of my life.
In a certain way, you really could say that they were victims too of that same ideology.
And that's
ideology.
Something you can see woven through every single story, Roberta. And that's, I am an incredibly empathetic person. I will adopt you and bring you home and love on you to the ends of time. And I can even hear the horror stories. It does not at all justify things that have happened. But then you hear, oh, this mom was, you know, experienced SA as a child, and she wanted to protect her kids. So then, you know, my counselor, when I first started going to him, described my childhood as a cocoon. And the best way for my parents to keep me safe was to put me in this cocoon and to have an influence in making sure, A, I don't go to hell. And, you know, that's what's on the line here. It's like, these parents,
that's what they think is on the line.
And the other thing that's very, very like beautiful to anyone look, you know, from the outside looking in that would be drawn into this is that you have answers. Like it's
shiny,
black and white.
People.
Right. But it's, if you do X, Y, and Z, you're golden. You've got nothing to worry about. And I don't think anything in life works that way. Would it be nice? Absolutely. Yes. But to me, if I see anything now that says, this is the answer, and if you do it like this, you're set, I'm immediately going to go, hell no. Like, that makes me question everything.
Yeah.
So, and it's funny because you and I have talked about MLM stuff, and I absolutely have been unwilling my entire life to ever get involved, but I didn't even know the term MLM. I would just be like, that's a pyramid scheme. Like, what are you doing? No, not essential oils. No, not for your stomach. No, not for those vitamins. Nope, nope, nope. Like,
no detoxes.
If someone else is making more money over you because of you, I'm done. Can't sign me up at all. So that
you saw that cult for sure.
Oh, absolutely.
You're like, that's absolutely a scam.
Yes.
Now I need to go back to homeschool.
Yes. Oh my God, I love it. Yep. That is, it's so crazy because I still need so much therapy. Like I've been interviewing people all week. You don't even, and I've been doing it for this man's sanity because
I am not a licensed counselor.
No, he's been,
I'm an amateur arsonist at best.
Oh my gosh.
Not a healthy way to deal with your problems.
Oh my gosh.
I built a fire pit outside our house for therapy.
Like, yes.
In the winter, I go out a couple times a week and just burn wood.
Now, Roberta's a camper.
But we went to the beach for my daughter's fifth grade. It was the last day of school. And then the day after, because her teacher's a surfer, we all went to the beach and he was giving the kids surf lessons. And so I was like, I'll just, going to be freezing cold. So I will bring firewood. And I set up at the fire pit and I set up this big bonfire and I brought all the stuff for s'mores and all of the freezing cold kids, all these little girls in the tiles going, can I make a marshmallow next?
Oh my
and they're all just standing around this fire, just shivering. It was like 63 degrees outside.
Oh, yeah,
and they're all in the ocean. I'm like, okay. So yeah. And everyone's like, oh, did you bring all this special for the beach day? And I was like, yeah. Like, no, I had all of this in my car.
Yeah.
I didn't need to do anything except add a couple more logs into the car. I had everything ready to go.
That is amazing. I freaking love it. That is
so amateur arsonist. I understand.
Yeah.
Love it.
Yeah. That is definitely applies to you.
So I have a question that kind of like, it goes with what we're talking. So it's a really great segue. So Tia, in her a little bit culty interview, she mentioned like that the adult spankings that she received had come from this like very, very niche ideology cult within the cult type thing and wasn't necessarily like an IBLP blanket thing. So I was just curious, and you kind of already touched on it a little bit, but did either of you experience any like specific behavior that was just part of a specific sect that your family followed that other people didn't also
experience?
That's an
excellent question. It's a great question. That's like extra culty, that scenario with Tia. Like,
right. Because it may, in the documentary, if you're not familiar, it makes it almost seem that it's like a blanket thing that IBLP does. And I know a lot of that happens within the fundamentalist and this whole like movement. And so it's not necessarily an IBLP thing. So I was just curious if you guys had any other experiences like that.
I mean, I will just off the bat, I will echo what you're saying as far as that specific thing is not something that I ever saw, ever heard. I don't recall ever even hearing like stories about like it from like from my side of
right,
things.
Right.
And I know that you're asking for even outside of that, but I don't think that, at least for me, I can't think of anything that would be like unique or like, whoa, that was.
Yeah.
Maybe talk to me in a year after more therapy.
Yeah, right. I don't know. I'm struggling to sift through memories, trying to discern what was IBLP and what wasn't. We went to a handful of fundamentalist and, you know, non-denominational churches, and there was a lot of weird stuff that they spoke, but all of it pretty much overlapped with IBLP.
The only thing that pops into my mind as far as like Floyd's situation or experience would be, I feel like this would be more specifically IBLP, because even though, so my upbringing was different than Floyd's, we did utilize some of it, but when I walked into Floyd's life and into his family and found out that his father was a pedophile, and not only did his mom stay with her husband, their father, but as soon as he was done, the day that he could come back home, he came back home.
Head over to quince.com and grab yourself a little something something and support the show by supporting our sponsors. The weather's getting warmer, so it's time to say goodbye to jackets and sweaters and say hello to lightweight fabrics and classic styles. I have been taking advantage of the beautiful weather and getting outside for daily walks, and I cannot say enough good things about the Flowknit high-rise boyfriend jogger from Quince. Seriously, running errands, doing school pickups, swinging by the farmer's market, or taking Zsa Zsa for a stroll around the lake, these bad boys are versatile. I love the deep pockets, the high waistband, and the internal hidden drawstring. They're quick drying, moisture wicking, antimicrobial, and the four-way stretch makes them so comfortable. They're made with 88% recycled polyester, and the Global Style Standard certified yarn dramatically lowers environmental impact by diverting landfill and ocean-bound plastic. Not to mention using recycled claim standard approved dyeing, washing, and manufacturing processes with low water and eco-friendly dyes. They have become an absolute favorite, and you can save up to 59% off the high-end counterpart by shopping with Quince. Throw on a Cotton Modal scoop neck tee and some sneakers, and you've got a perfect, effortless outfit. Get warm weather ready with Quince. Go to quince.com/MLM for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/MLM to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/MLM. Do you ever wonder how much of your personal data is out there on the internet just for anyone to find? I promise it's more than you think. Your name, contact info, social security number, home address, even information about your family members. It's all being compiled by data brokers and openly sold online. This can lead to a lot of problems, including identity theft, phishing attempts, harassment, and unwanted spam calls. But now you can protect your privacy with Delete Me. Signing up for the service is super easy. Just provide Delete Me with exactly what information you want deleted, and their experts take it from there. They send you regular, personalized privacy reports showing what info they found, where they found it, and what they removed. I got my report, and I was floored with the results. Of the 105 data brokers they checked, 83 of them had my data. Delete Me then removed 173 listings of my personal data off the internet. And they make sure that it stays off too. Take control of your data and keep your private life private by signing up for Delete Me at a special discount just for our listeners. Get 20% off your Delete Me plan when you go to joindeleteme.com/MLM and use promo code MLM at checkout. The only way to get the 20% off is to go to joindeleteme.com/MLM and enter code MLM at checkout. That's joindeleteme.com/MLM, code MLM.
And so even though I also had a fundy upbringing, walking into that situation was mind-boggling. I viewed it as like, this is ludicrous. My family viewed it as ludicrous. They're like, no, this is like a non-negotiable. If this is something that happens,
this is
insanity. Yeah. So, and then, but as a result of this, like Floyd's.
But can you really say that wasn't, IBLP was a core part of why she stayed with him.
That's my point. Like, yeah. She's asking, is there anything as a part of IBLP that was, you know, like, you know, that was a little more culty. And it's like that my upbringing, my church, the people that we were surrounded with in homeschool groups, I do not believe that would have ever been something that would have been supported and put on a pedestal. Whereas within the IBLP culture, it was.
Surprise.
Yeah. That was just, they were kind of like, and maybe I'm being dramatic, but to me, if anyone's not openly against it, it makes it more like the phrase that she used with me was, we remained one. When we got married, we became one.
Yeah.
And I was never going to be free.
She never had the right to divorce him.
No, she was not going to leave the unity of their marriage of as being one. And let's just say I was not on either of his parents'
favorite person list.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't think he made the top 2,000.
No. Because I walked in, and since I didn't have that IBLP background, I did not view their marriage like that. And I'm going, what the hell are you doing? Why was this something that you allowed your kids to like be in danger or walk through? Where's the priority? And the priority was keeping the oneness of their marriage.
Yeah,
it's interesting you say that, because it mirrors a lot of the interviews that like Anna Duggar has given since Josh has gone to prison. Like,
oh,
it's
absolutely.
Just the exact same thing.
It's so mind-boggling. And I'm so glad they made the point in the documentary. I believe it's in episode 4. And I think it was Tia who actually said it, was she would have a book deal like that. She would be a multimillionaire like that.
Yeah.
So if that doesn't show people the depths and the claws and the roots of this ideology, not even money itself could drive her from like.
I can't think of anything more un-American.
Oh my gosh. But like, she would never. I hope, and I would love to see that maybe in the future, this is something that happens, but I don't foresee it happening anytime soon. Like, if anything, with the documentary coming out and her still relying on the Duggar family as a support system, it's something that happens where when someone comes up against you, you double down.
Yeah. And going through this process and rereading for the first time a lot of the IBLP material, I mean, not a lot, because
he couldn't take it. He couldn't handle it.
We cracked open a wisdom booklet and I had a mental breakdown for like 48 hours. I was just like, done, checked out, and have not opened one since then, because I don't think I can. But just revisiting a lot of it and in conversations with other people over and over again, these philosophies and teachings that seem perfectly primed to separate you from other people, from other support systems, from anything that might give you an ounce of clarity or safety outside of the governing hierarchy that's probably the one abusing you. It's fundamental. It's a bedrock that the whole system is built on, which is isolation, separation, and
keeps you from asking
ignorance.
Questions.
Yeah.
Yeah. It keeps you, because when I first started my deconstruction, I was a couple months in. God bless that man. Like, just the Bob.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Every time I leave a counseling session with Bob, I would call Floyd and he would go, every time, Roberta.
It's been a couple years now, but I still ask.
Yeah. Is he going to see you again?
Like, is he done with
like
you?
I traumatized the counselor to not want to see me anymore. Like, he's such a supportive husband. Like,
have
so
you broken him yet?
Yes, yeah. That's exactly
he's
what
he's so doing. Nice. He's like a wish.com Mr. Rogers. He's the best.
Yeah, he's amazing. But he recommended to me a few months after seeing him, like, I swear he was able to like recognize that I wasn't going to be able to talk to, you know, like negatively about anyone that was a part of my upbringing or my situation. Like, that was just not something that was going to happen. But I think he also sensed that I was not in a place where I could pick up a self-help book. And so then when I had been going for a few months, he recommended to me The Gifts of Imperfection by Brené Brown. And it was this mind-boggling situation because he was kind of a man who was kind of an authority over my life. Like, I know this sounds so twisted, but, and I know that I wasn't consciously thinking this.
He's older. He's a man.
Yes.
He works at a church.
Yes. Boom. Like, he automatically. And so up until that point, no one had given me permission. Like, and if anything, these kinds of books were kind of like, you just don't pick them up. He told me that I should read it. And I was like, oh, okay. So I went and I got it. I got it on Audible. I got it in paperback. I got it in hardcover. Like, I went all the way, and it was mind boggling. That, I know I keep saying mind boggling, but I was so shell shocked by the information that I was reading, and that there was just like another way to think, and it didn't have to be so intensely
black and white.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know why I brought that up, but
I think everybody listening completely understands that. Yes, yes, yes. The black and white. Absolutely.
Yeah. That's a huge part of fundamentalism.
And deprogramming from it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And beginning to
accepting the unknown.
There can be exceptions, and you can ask questions. And because they really discourage
critical thinking.
Yeah. Yeah. That is what it is.
So the documentary comes out. Have you had any backlash or any fair gaming, people attacking you, calling you names, anything like that?
I would say that as far as online goes, or like an online presence, I have been so humbled and grateful for like just people. Support. I read a message today that just totally, my heart just like melted all over the floor. And
is that what that was?
Yes, that's what the mess was. That's what I needed the map for. Yeah. The message said something to the effect of, I know you probably don't think that you're a hero. And I, like, right off the bat, I'm reading that, I'm like, yeah, hell no. No, I'm just a normal human person. And they were like, but to share your story at all, you know, to this degree, you're saving lives. And it's letting people know that even though maybe they can't put their finger on exactly what's wrong, these people who've gone before them, like, have maybe figured it out. And it's okay to maybe ask some questions and the challenge. And by the way,
it's literally just shedding light.
Yes. And since there are people who've walked before you, we got you, boo. Like, come on. It's okay. It's safe over here. That bridge, it's not as scary as it looks. It's long. It'll take you a while. But, you know, I think that has been one of the most beautiful parts of this experience, is getting to know the cast. And we've all shared this, you know, experience.
Yeah.
Our stories don't match, but we all understand one another.
There's a lot of overlap.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And just with some of the backlash that we've received, getting to go to them and be like, oh my gosh, this is what's happened. And then the validation, because to a certain extent, the conditioning that at least I received as a child leaves you so dependent on the validation of those over you or an authority over you, that I'm sitting here, a 37-year-old woman that is still trying to figure out how to validate herself. And I know to a certain extent, we all struggle with that, but I feel that this conditioning is even more so. Yeah. Like, I never got to step into my adult shoes. And if that's something that anybody listening that resonates with them, that's an important sign that something happened in your childhood that didn't allow you to make that transition. And that's something that I'm definitely learning as a result of all this.
I'll say this. I don't have a ton of people in my life that understand or know about any of this. So overall, it's been supportive. My siblings watched it. They loved it. They were excited. I am still in touch with a few people that I went to Verity with, for example, and they were excited. A few coworkers have seen it. Which is weird. I was in the office the other day and somebody yelled from the other room, Floyd, you're on my TV! And that was weird. But overall, it's been positive. Even, and this is where my brain just kind of exploded, my mother, who is unrepentant and says she would do everything again the same way she did it.
Or at least this is something that she said like 10 years ago.
Yeah.
So we haven't really had a whole lot of in-depth conversations since then. I'm just not trying to...
Well,
I'm a very protective person. I don't know. Like, I'm not trying
it's
to
not
protect
your job to
bad,
protect,
like,
protect adults.
I know.
In any case, my mother watched it and texted through someone else, because we don't talk a whole lot directly, that she was proud of me, proud of us. And I was like, holy shit, what alternative dimension have I fallen into?
like
that my psychotic mother watched it at all and somehow came away with a positive opinion, even if she's lying. Even if she's lying, that's not the person that I grew up with.
Yeah. Yeah.
So,
That's incredible.
It's insane.
I burst into tears. Like I got this text message and he was in a meeting and I just started crying.
I thought somebody had died. She doesn't burst in very often. Usually it's some kind of emergency. It kind of was.
I wanted, because it had been sent to us in a group text. So I knew he had the text message and I wanted to see his reaction. I'm like, you are not going to read this without me in the room. Yeah. I have to view your reaction. And just the idea, you know, I was 19 when I married him. I was 18 when I met him, his family, you know, and just the experiences as a teenager, being the first person to walk into their lives to be like, the shit is wrong. What is happening here? You know, I was the villain in their story. Yeah. And to be sitting here almost 20 years later going, she's proud of us. Like, I
don't think I've fully accepted that it's happened. Again, this is an alternate dimension that I didn't originally belong to. I don't know what happened to all y'all's Floyd. I'm sorry for your loss. I don't know if he died and I took his place or if he's in my dimension now.
Yeah,
why is my mom so awful? And I've got this one.
Yeah.
No, I don't know.
Yeah, this is, I guess what I'm comfortable saying is that is not the text message that I have received.
No one can see me nodding vigorously in agreement.
You know, the overarching message that I have received,
quite the opposite,
is that I have misrepresented what my childhood was, what my involvement was, and that I was not raised in a cult. And
which is exactly what people who perpetrate a cult would say.
He does have a point.
Oh my gosh. And you know, I think I've mentioned a few times, I definitely need more therapy and I'm looking into EMDR and I'm searching for, you know, the right people to have as a part of my team, because I do not feel that I have misrepresented what my childhood was. I've repeatedly said how wonderful and beautiful it was. I have said that we use the character sketchbooks. I vaguely remember using some wisdom booklets and I went to at least two conferences.
And the poisonous ideology that you absorbed from the limited contact nearly killed you.
Yes.
So I'm just throwing that out there.
And that ideology was represented in other ways through James Dobson, through Adventures in Odyssey, through, you know, other books, like
non-denominational
Christian fundamental. Yeah. Yes. And at the end of the day, the fact that I have deconstructed and have stepped away from my fundy roots is the thing that, if I don't look the same anymore, if you don't match, that is just a really important, it's one of the reasons why I had never picked up a self-help book. You know, you don't want to be of the world. You don't want to be.
When your worldview and your ideology demands utter compliance, anyone who doesn't match that becomes the enemy.
Yeah.
And that's no way to live a life.
It has sucked.
Yeah.
Well, strangers are great though.
Strangers are great.
Yeah.
People, you know, not so much. That's kind of par for the course, I think, when you when you step out and you go against the norm.
Yeah.
But I'm proud of you.
Oh,
I know I just met you, but I am proud of you, both of you.
No, and I deeply appreciate that. I still have so much deprogramming to do because,
again, people cannot see me vigorously nodding in agreement.
Gosh. I just... Because there are people in my life that were authority in my life, even today, if I hear that viewpoint, my brain goes, they're right and I'm wrong. And that is, I think EMDR and more specialized therapy is going to be the only way to kind of
deprogram.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, let's flip the script really quick and talk about something funny.
Okay.
Because one of the funniest things in the documentary for me was how you guys talked about how you were homeschool kids and you sort of just knew it by looking at each other. Those of us who are not homeschooled, can you describe the look? And you can go into as much detail as you'd like.
Oh, yeah.
What's the look of a homeschool kid that made you go, he's the one?
So I'm going to start because this is one of my favorite stories of all time.
Oh my gosh. Okay.
When we met, I was working at Walmart in the electronics section and she came in. We grew up in the Midwest. There wasn't a lot to do. Walmart was the thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
So we eventually began speaking. There was a lot of sass in the beginning. we ended up talking for like 3 hours. And for like the first hour and a half, she's bouncing up and down. She's real animated, or people can't see me waving my hands, but there was just a lot, you know, intense eye contact, because we're trained to look people in the eye and give them a firm handshake, and just this intensity. And she kept saying over and over again, I'm not on drugs. I'm just really excited. I swear I'm not on drugs, which is what a person who's on drugs would say.
Oh my God.
And then about an hour and a half, maybe 2 hours into the conversation, she goes, you know, I was homeschooled. And I go, oh my gosh.
I said, I'm not on drugs. Oh, I know what will convince you. I was homeschooled.
And boom, I knew it. I believed her. You're not on drugs. Because I was homeschooled too. And then her head exploded. Mm-hmm. It was.
Yeah. But I would say that the look of a homeschooler. Okay. So number one, my upbringing tells me that the look of a homeschooler is someone who is being quietly respectful and, you know, just maybe can speak to adults better than other kids their own age. And those things are true. I have, you know, even in recent years, been at, you know, different, like a splash pad, and there were two kids that were incredibly kind to my son. And like,
and they came over and talked to me
and looked me in the eye. And it was just very like, I go, you guys are homeschooled. I go, where's your mom? Like
there was a little bit of fear in their eyes, because I think they thought maybe she's a DCFS officer.
A true officer. Yeah.
Because as kids, we're always a little hesitant to answer that question. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, we lived in constant fear of the government. But
because we were told to live in constant fear of the government. Yeah.
Yes.
That's a pivotal part of that.
Yeah.
But I would say now, as today, Tara, there is still a certain look. Sometimes it depends, because there's different ends of the spectrum. To the extreme, you see kids, girls with long hair, they're in dresses, and young men can be, you know, their clothes can look very clean and pressed and just, you know, almost, it's not a uniform, but it almost looks like they're going to church kind of a thing. Not a suit and tie, but just clean and polished.
They stick out.
I'm trying to put that into words. Like, and there's also
maybe you had to be there.
An overwhelming look of kind of like,
hello, fellow kids.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
This is going to be a hard throwback to anyone who had a fundamentalist upbringing, but in the Left Behind books,
You familiar with those?
I mean, I dated a fundy guy, and his family was super into the Left Behind books and movies early 2000s.
Yes. Yes.
So, yes. So much of me is being triggered by what you're saying, because I know my listeners know, like, that I wasn't raised in the church, but like, the more I talk to fundies and talk about purity culture and all of this stuff, I'm like, oh my God, but like, someone in my family was somewhere, because all of these, even you talking about the truancy officer, like my dad would talk about the truancy officer.
Yes.
Yeah. I'd never heard, like, yes. So I don't know, someone in my family somewhere.
There's some connection, because you've got, some fringe things getting triggered.
That's hilarious.
Yeah.
But today I would probably describe the Left Behind series as poorly written Christian fan fiction. But there's this thing where they all have the, you know, there's the mark of the beast, that's the Antichrist, but the Christians have their own mark that only they can see, so they can tell who the real Christians are. And I was just imagining that for homeschoolers, like there's an aura, or like a spiritual neon sign over their heads only other homeschoolers can see. I don't know.
The visual dog whistle.
Yes. Yeah. Well, I mean, and to a certain extent, I feel like as an adult today, or so they tell me, when I see, you know, maybe some that are like, you know, they're very fundy, there's just a look of like out of place.
Yeah.
Like maybe even a little bit of fear, because it sounds so crazy, but it's like, okay, I have a memory of seeing like a very Duggar style family at Walmart. And the thing is, especially if it's anything like Bill Gothard, IBLP, mm-hmm. it's anything around you could attach to you and you can bring it home and your family's affected by it. Is someone going to come up and ask me if I want to take drugs? Like that, like it's the world is so evil, you know, for sure. There's someone's going to come and make me do something bad and I've got to be on guard. So it's kind of like a, what? Okay. I'm being respectful, but also on the alert for the devil. Like that's kind of the vibe yeah. I get. That would be though, from the more extreme side. She's dying.
Yeah.
I'm dying. Got to be on the alert. For the devil, like
for the devil.
Yes,
right.
Like your yes. face right now.
Oh yeah,
I'm just like oh, yeah. deer in headlights.
That's
scared,
the
shifty eyes,
Roberta. Deer in the headlights, oh, yeah. And you actually used to describe homeschool kids like that.
Yeah, that, yeah, I know that checks
you
out.
Did.
Yeah,
and that was because you can look at them, and even if say they're not as fundy at, or as IBLP, like
they're
the Duggars,
worldly clothes.
Or say they're just more atypical, like my family. You know, middle of the line. I got to wear jeans. There wasn't, we had to be modest. Like there were no two-piece swimsuits, you know, one piece, and you had to have cover-ups and stuff like that. But like that was way more worldly than what the Duggars got to experience.
Yeah, I mean, you guys did mixed swimming.
Oh yeah, we did. Oh yeah.
At Verity, like, there was a gym that we belonged to. Well, I didn't, but you know, the other people.
I was like, this is news to me.
Yeah, no.
The computer nerd.
I only heard about the gym.
Oh, okay. Okay.
But there
rumor
was
rumor had it. There was a gym.
There was a gym in Flint that did a deal with Verity. So anyone who wanted to sign up got a mm-hmm. deal. And they did swimming. The guys were on Tuesday and the girls were on Thursday. They left 24 hours between. I don't know. So that the water wouldn't be tainted with the men.
I would assume that's what it is.
But yeah, they left 24 hours in between, you know, just for propriety's sake, I guess.
Wow. So then here comes another Arrested Development moment.
Yes.
How triggering is Anne and the Veal family for you watching? Because they're kind of like the Fundy family in Arrested Development.
Well, first of all, let me say that Alan Tudyk can do no wrong.
He's
an
so
national
good.
Treasure.
Well, yes. You got to lock that down.
Oh, yeah. Oh, for sure. Yeah. Yeah. Oh my gosh.
But quite. You know, it's funny because years ago, I mean, like 2 to 3 years ago, I would be triggered by things at a deeper level or a different level than what Tara would have experienced. So, like when The Handmaid's Tale first came out, I'm sitting there watching it mortified because I'm like, I grew up with people who think this is a great idea.
And I'm sitting there watching this, like, this is so artistic. Like, I just, this is so, like, it just, that's just so deep of a disconnect.
I'm ready to throw up. And she's like,
now, mind
she's
you,
she's making notes.
Nope.
Not on the artistic thing.
Yeah. But now, mind you, the other thing that pops into my mind about like Anne from Arrested Development or like Handmaid's Tale, like, not only would that not be something that you would ever be allowed to watch
yeah, right.
through IBLP, but like, if you view something that's kind of like in Arrested Development's case, making fun of or making light of,
yeah.
like, do that's irreverent. Do not like, don't even watch it.
Well, that's just
so there's guilt in watching that. And then with Handmaid's Tale, I watched it for years before I ever told a soul, like not even a friend, that I watched it because it would be considered like that it's being disrespectful. Because like, that's not what we believe as Christians, you know, that's not what we think should happen. But when you look at, oh, I don't know, Florida, like that does feel like a path that could like a real case scenario.
Yeah.
So it took me starting my deconstruction to go, oh, shit, this is scary AF. And oh, my gosh, this is exactly it feels all too real. So then we were both sitting there like, you know, freaked out.
Horrified.
Oh, yeah.
If. And this is, you know, just a red flag alert for any of the people listening. If you watch anything like The Handmaid's Tale or Shiny Happy People and you feel personally attacked, then you are probably a bad person.
Oh, my God.
And
you can't sway people like that. That's not your starting off point, Floyd.
This is the polite version of what I've been saying for weeks, which is if you see this and you think it's an attack on your ideology, well, then fuck you. Because
what he means by fuck you is. Dig deeper.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Look
there
into
we go.
That more. Maybe
yeah.
you're
oh
in a high demand
Roberta,
control group.
Think welcome
about your
to
life
my world.
Because yeah.
Floyd goes straight to fire pit. And I'm like, you know, maybe we could like address this a little more calmly.
I do tend to skip passive and go straight to aggressive.
Yeah, that is like, that is his thing. There's that word passive does not even exist. But I did see someone, you know what? I would love to actually read it if at all possible, because it was that powerful to me. So we knew there would be people in regards to the documentary that would feel it as an attack, you know, not only on perhaps their religious choices, but on homeschooling. And whether or not it was spoken or unspoken, a massive part of my upbringing included, like, you know, you don't want the government involved. You know, you don't want your rights to be challenged. You want to completely stay protected. And so you don't even want to talk bad about your belief systems or the things that are important to you, even like adjacent to it, because eventually it could come back and hurt you or what you want to be doing.
Fear.
Yes. And maybe a little bit of fear on top.
Good point.
Just
and then for... sprinkled with fear.
Yes, you nailed it. Okay. So there was, this was on Twitter.
Oh yeah.
And someone tweeted, the Duggar documentary is ultimately just an excuse to make Christian families look insane. It has very little to do with the actual theological or cultural problems with this specific sect and has much more to do with making Christians as a whole look like fools.
Which, to my aforementioned point, fuck that person.
And I will
move. Or think more deeply about your life choices.
Yes.
Yeah.
Lead with that one.
Okay.
And then you think the FU part head. Okay. That's, yes. Okay. And the response by this person, Reverend Jacob Brenton.
The much more thoughtful response.
Yes. That just like, I have it on my phone because the second I start to feel like, oh my gosh, you know, this was scary, Roberta.
Did I help attack?
This is like, because I'm not anti-religion. I'm not anti-homeschooling. I'm pro doing it responsibly and without abuse.
You're anti-abuse.
Yes.
Yeah.
But the thing is, again, anything like even on the outskirts of what you believe, if that's being attacked, then you're being attacked. And so that
Stumble
makes
the wagons.
Right. So this is what he said. Our main takeaway from Shiny Happy People as Christians shouldn't be, yikes, what a PR problem for Christianity. It should be weeping for the victims, repentance for how we enabled IBLP, and resolve to dismantle systems within our religion that enable abuse. Like,
beautiful.
Yes.
And that's basically what I said.
I mean, you're just more short and sweet, but yeah, I'm
much
basically
more
what Floyd said.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Just efficient. I'm a computer programmer. I like things to be short.
Oh my God. This human. But I think that that is a problem within Christian fundamentalism that is rampant. Like, no questions.
Yeah.
If you start to question something, it is an attack. And it's just.
That's not true.
It's not. You should be able to have a discussion. If you're listening and there's a situation in your life where even if it's not spoken, but you know it subconsciously that you can't ask a question about this or you'll hit X, Y, Z of a different responses that are not going to be pleasant.
That needs to be a signal for alarm.
That is a huge signal. That is a huge signal. Yeah. If you cannot challenge something, that is wrong.
Yep.
It doesn't make you less of a believer. It doesn't make you less of, you know, a Christian or whatever to ask questions. If you can't question something,
it makes you less of a cult member.
That's true.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think too, like everything about my upbringing, and I don't mean this from like my parents' perspective, like that my parents taught me this. This is just what I picked up along the way. Yes.
Yeah.
There was some conditioning in there too. I have to be completely honest.
Incapable of lying.
Yes. It's like grace and love are things that you are taught, but you aren't necessarily always shown. There's no tolerance for sin, and there's no tolerance. I just think about like
for people who don't conform to that worldview.
Yes. And it's like once you're out, you're kind of out. I don't know. I don't know why that just hit me like that, but
yeah.
I've struggled my entire life with feeling so much love and so much grace for people.
Yeah.
But at the end of the
system that doesn't want that.
Right. I'd say at the end of the day, the biggest thing that was like, obviously COVID and having that time together, my deconstruction really helped. But there was a book, I'm not going to remember her last name. The book is called How to Do the Work. Have you heard about it?
Nicole LaPar.
By Dr. Nicole LaPar.
Yeah.
And I had followed her on Instagram for a while. Her Instagram handle is the Holistic Psychologist. And she comes at every single person has had trauma. Now, my trauma doesn't look the same as yours, Roberta, but your childhood, me sitting here not knowing a thing about your childhood, I know that you experienced trauma. And that's the way that she applies it. Because as a child, we look to our parents as the people who are keeping us alive, and it's for survival. So we are going to bend to the will and to the needs of the people who are meeting our needs. And as a result of that, trauma happens, conditioning happens, blah, blah, blah. So she looks at it from that perspective and then shows you how to work through it, how to give yourself worth, how to...
It's a lot of hippy dippy bullshit, and it's all 100% true.
He said that from the perspective of our upbringings, like that book was not on an approved reading list, like not in the slightest. I made so many waves when I started talking about that book in my life. It was very traumatizing.
But it was foundational for you to get health for you and for health us, mentally. Yeah.
That was the thing. Like, because then in these moments where like, I'm like, why is he responding this way? Oh my gosh, is he going to go out drinking? Or oh my gosh, is he hiding something from me? It really showed us the tools to start breaking those moments down. And we have, Floyd and I are not perfect. I don't want anyone to have picked that up along the way. We still have, we'll have disagreements, arguments. We do not fight. Like that is not something that we do, because when we start to have a situation, without fail, one of us will realize that the other one is being the hurt child in the situation. And it's so weird because it just feels, I don't even know how it happens, but it does, where he will look at me and I'll see it in his eyes where it's like mercy and grace and love. And I'm like, well, shit, I'm being the hurt child in this situation. And then there's times where like he's aggravated or upset or frustrated about something. And I'm like, oh my gosh, this is the Floyd who had to be the man of the house. This is the Floyd who had to cook in order for him and his siblings to eat. This is the man who had to do laundry in order for them to have clean clothes because their mom was too upset to move or function because their dad had been sent away. So it's like, I see he's operating out of that. And I think that we need to do that with the people, with everyone, but the people that we love the most, we desperately need to
understand.
Yeah. And just realize that we're all going to be coming from that place of the hurt child or the traumatized child. I'm not sure I answered your question.
You did. You answered so many of the ones that I have. So they sort of all like lump in. I have one last question or one last sort of statement from a Patreon member. So Donna asked, first, I want to thank both of you for your bravery to be involved in Shiny Happy People and for taking time to be interviewed. She says that I hope you are both taking the time that you need mentally and emotionally. I listened to Jen, I think Kuna, I don't know how to say her last name, but I listened to Jen Kuna's interview on cults and consciousness. She was an IBLP and worked at the training centers. Based on her experience, she described Shiny Happy People as basically the PG version of an R-rated movie. Wow. Do you feel that that description is valid based on your experiences?
Yes.
I'm trying to remember what the difference between R and NC-17 is. we'll just go with R.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Or yes. I've been saying since it came out, this just scratches the surface. There's so much to unpack. They did a phenomenal job.
They did a fantastic job, but I mean, they stayed, you know, like at one point in the documentary, there's like this image of like IBLP kind of as the umbrella and then all the things that came underneath it. And the stories that they could tell about every single one of those individual ministries programs that fall underneath that is mind-boggling. Yeah. And when I say, you know, yes, absolutely, I'm saying it again, not as someone who witnessed it firsthand, but from what I've seen with my husband and what I've heard from other people, it's mind-boggling.
Yeah.
But
well, I'm glad to know that you guys are feeling that way too. I mean, I saw it and I felt like it scratched the surface based on just what I know from talking to people about these topics. And it was the same with Lula Rich as well. You know, I was like, they didn't talk about this or this or this or this.
Right.
So that's why I like to have these sort of interviews anyway, because there's so much, and you guys didn't get as much screen time as I thought you really needed, but there's so much to have, so many conversations. I mean, just hours and hours of conversations, and you'll never, ever get to the bottom.
Right.
The one of the things that we've been told is, so all of the people who are in this cast have phenomenal stories that deserve more airtime. And I'm not like tooting Floyd's horn or, you know, anybody specifically, but if you want to hear more of the people who very bravely stepped up to be a part of this documentary, their stories, please contact Amazon Prime. Like, please let these people know.
Harass them.
Yes. Leave it in the reviews.
Right. Like, Jeff Bezos. Oh my God.
No, but however you can do it, at Amazon Prime on TikTok, on Instagram, and in the, you can leave reviews on the documentary itself, you know, on Amazon Prime, and say, I want to hear more from this person or this person. I would like more details from every single person who was in this cast.
Yeah.
And because I just think, like, I've had the immense honor of getting to know these humans, and they're phenomenal people, and they're all worthy of, I feel like their bravery should be acknowledged and their voice amplified maybe a little bit more. Like,
and let's just be crass about it. I mean, there's a lot of tea to spill. There's a lot of gossip that didn't fit well into the incredibly accurate and well-presented documentary that they made. We got a lot of shit to talk about.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what like live Patreon exclusive chats are for. I mean, we can really say whatever we want in there because it's not in public.
There you go.
You gotta pay to see that stuff.
Yeah. I mean, one of the things just off, the, you know, without getting too deep is Alert, the militia program.
Yeah.
It was diabolical. Mm-hmm. It was, that is one of the areas that, yeah, they, the whole thing was very harmful, but Alert, we have firsthand, you know, knowledge
of people who went through the program, and it's insidious. It all is. Yeah.
Those boys will never be the same.
For me, like, that was one of the really cool things with the documentary, was shining the light on those sort of things, because I think most people know that stuff is happening somewhere, because like, how else would we get what we're getting? Like, there's some sort of pipeline, but we just kind of call it the pipeline. But now we know it's called the Joshua generation. Like, we know that it's this training pipeline from this schooling to the White House kind of thing. Yes. Like, and I was like, oh, there's a name for it. There's language for this.
Yes. Okay. Yes. And just to be completely frank, they knew this documentary was coming, and some of the lingo, they've already been prepping to change it. Yeah. So now you know the signs of it. Even if it's called something different, it's still related.
It's all the same material.
How MLM-y of them to change the names of things to different names.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Very
MLM. To avoid accountability and press. Wow.
It is.
And it makes you wonder what happened, because they changed from the Institute and Basic Youth Conflicts to the Institute and Basic Life Principles.
Oh, yeah. Back in the 80s.
Yeah. What the hell happened there?
Interesting. Mm. Oh, yeah. There's. Dun, dun, dun.
Well, the story I'm really interested to hear about, because it's been hinted a couple times, and I was like, wait, save it until I hit record, because I want to be surprised. So you've already mentioned several times that you work in IT and you're a computer nerd and all of that.
It's very apparent.
So the story I want to hear about. I heard something about you putting something on Bill Gothard's computer or something.
Yes. So this was probably the very last Knoxville conference I ever attended.
How old were you?
I was probably 19-ish.
Okay. Were you currently attending Verity?
Yes.
Okay.
So I was at Verity, which was IBLP's fake college, presumably to get a degree in computer science, which I never did because it wasn't real. and it's weird because like I have this weird timeline of we went to the conferences for years and years, and then we kind of stopped, and there was like a year or two gap. Maybe they didn't have one year, or we just didn't go, whatever. But I distinctly remember this was my last one because I was in Verity, and they had this awful kid. His name was Ben. He was the head of IT at Oak Brook headquarters. At least that's what I remember. And everyone hated him because he was an idiot. And
tell us how you really feel.
Yeah, I know, right? He's just, it's like, that's been the biggest trial my whole life, Roberta, is just trying to get any information out of this man. It's like just pulling teeth.
I sat in Bill Gothard's office. We had gone there to beg him for like $400 to start a computer lab to repair computers, which he denied, because if we repaired someone's computer, they might go and use it for pornography. And that would be our fault because we fixed it. So, whatever.
Yeah.
But he told us how his IT department had come to him and said, we need this really expensive server, like thousands of dollars. And they tried to justify it. And this wonder kid was like, oh, all we need is I got this old PC with two network cards in it and plugged it in and it sits on the floor and it does everything that other server would have done. And it didn't cost anything. And as I'm listening to him spiel this out, the actual IT guy in the background, I can just see him dying. And later got the details of they wanted an industrial grade server to handle the load for their pornography filtering service.
Character link.
It wasn't just pornography. You could filter up to, I think, 60 different categories. Pornography, humanism, sports, live chat. Like they had this
global warming.
Yeah, well,
like putting your own parental blocker on yourself.
Yeah, it was a whitelist for the internet, which meant you couldn't go to a website unless someone had physically approved it.
So it wasn't just blocking these 60 things. The only websites you could access were the things that IBLP had deemed appropriate.
Or had categorized. You got to pick which categories were blocked.
Mm-hmm.
But some poor traumatized girl at headquarters, there were like a dozen of them. They would sit all day and click through links that had been submitted for review.
Because if a family wanted to be able to look at a link, they had to send it to IBLP to be approved. Yep. And then there was this group of people
who did the categorization
process. Would go through and look like, okay, this is safe. They can go to this page about pandas.
Yes.
Hello, information control.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And oh man, my fond memories of Netscape browser, because I figured out pretty quick that you could download a different browser that didn't have the proxy settings baked into it and just completely get around it, which was
right.
You know,
let's get to the T.
Okay. So Character Link was their filtering system. I was at Knoxville. I was helping set up. So I ran network cable, set up different computers, whatever. I was shadowing Ben and they called him and said, hey, we need someone to come and work on Gothard's computer. He's like, come with me. So I went and we go and he opens up the Windows registry editor, which for non-nerds is like the core settings of the system. I'm like, oh, what do you do? He's starting to disable, like click and clack, disable this, delete that. I'm like, oh, what are you doing? He goes, well, all these come from headquarters preset with Character Link, but this computer is for Bill Gothard and he has to do too much research. So we have to disable Character Link on this computer. And the only way to do it is to edit the registry so it's permanently disabled, but only on his computer. So yeah, I personally oversaw Bill Gothard's laptop getting the accountability software disabled.
Rules for thee, but not for me.
100%, yes.
100%.
That's the message behind all of it.
When this is just another fun little snippet. He loved to talk about eating well, you know, eat whole wheat bread and real vegetables and like all these weird health things. Like he was like BuzzFeed before Buzz, like one weird trick your doctor doesn't want you to know about. It's wheat bread.
Oh my God.
But when I was in Russia, he came to oversee this thing they did for the retired school teachers once a year, big pageant, and he would come and everyone would applaud him, and it was really just for the accolades, I think. But man, we scrambled to get everything. We painted trim, we fixed doors,
all because he was coming to visit.
Everything had to be pristine. And one of the girls that was responsible for his room, getting the sheet, you know, changed the bed and got everything cleaned up, was panicking because she couldn't find a mini refrigerator. And I was like, what do you need a refrigerator for? And she's like, why are you talking to me? I'm a girl. No. She's like, well, anywhere Gothard goes, he has to have a mini fridge and it has to be filled with ice cream and Snickers and like all of this junk food, like a personal stash in his room. To his credit, Russian ice cream is like on point. I saw people standing in sub-zero temperatures to get ice cream outside. It was that good. But that was everywhere. It wasn't just in Russia. Yeah. Anywhere.
It's just so strange. Like he's talking about all this health food. And again, it's this like, I'm better than you, but not really.
This is how you need to live your life.
In order for God to, you know, love you. But I'm obviously the earpiece to God. God has clearly blessed
me. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, obviously God invented ice cream,
right?
And that's fine. Then you can have it.
I'm
like
sure
he gave us the knowledge to make it. So it's good.
Yeah.
I'm going to allow ice cream. I'm going to give it a pass.
But not Snickers.
Yeah, that nougat is otherworldly. So yeah, I don't know. Maybe witchcraft.
Yeah, it very much
idolatry.
Could be.
Yes. The true.
Oh my gosh. Never ceased to amaze me, you know, hearing any stories that just made it like, you know, he can do no wrong, but everyone else needs to live their life like this.
Yeah.
Spoken like a true cult leader.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. Absolutely.
Wow. Well, I want to say thank you to you guys for coming on here and having this chat with me. I've been looking forward to it, like, seriously, since the first time I met you. I was like, I can't wait to talk to you on the show.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
Where can everybody find you and follow you? Because I think they love you just as much as I do.
Well, we are on TikTok. My screen name, or our screen name, is Advocate Average. And that name is... Yes, it's all one word. That name is like very funny because I've had that screen name picked out for like over a decade, and I didn't know what it was like for, but it just, for me, it's the idea that we have been turned against some of these things that are so average, like ice cream or, you
television.
Know, television. And it's like, these are okay.
Emotional support.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And so I'm kind of wildly grateful for that name and for this season of our life. And you can find us under the same name on Instagram, Advocate Average.
I love it.
I lurk on Reddit, but I'm not going to tell anyone what my screen name is. So you'll just have to guess.
Ever give it up.
Yeah.
Don't ever give up your Reddit name ever.
Right? I'll have to make a new account.
Oh my God.
So at the end of my show, I do these rapid fire questions, and usually they're MLM based, but I edit them slightly
for
IBLP. Okay.
Okay.
All right. So one word to encompass how you feel about IBLP.
Disgusted.
I guess control.
Okay. So here is your chance to give somebody a warning to maybe somebody who's on the fringe of this lifestyle. I know IBLP doesn't like exist, or like, I guess the, whatever it is, you know, it's kind of like on the fringe now, but somebody who's in a similar group who might be contemplating going deeper into this, following that pipeline into that new ecosystem. What would you tell them? What would be your warning to them?
Anything that does not allow you to ask questions, you should be concerned about. You should be allowed to challenge it. And if it can stand up to questions, then it's worth following. But if you're not even allowed to ask the questions to begin with, please, you know, do a double take.
What she said. Really, though, I mean, that's, information is key. Anything that restricts or tries to control what you think are allowed to pursue is just run.
Yeah.
Don't. Life is more beautiful than
the conspiracy theories would let you think.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
Not everybody's going to get you.
Yeah. Yeah.
What is the worst memory that you have during your time in IBLP?
That is such a good question.
I'm really excited because, again, I have the heaviest answer out of anyone in the room. You answer first.
Oh, thanks. Throws that on me. So because I wasn't like a part of ATI, I would say that the number one thing that caused me trauma would be the character sketchbooks. And just as a little girl loving nature and animals, taking the stories that were utilized to just drive home the idea of being obedient or being loyal or having perseverance or being honest. I think those stories were slightly just traumatizing for me. And I, as a little girl, I took them way too seriously.
I think for me, it would probably be sitting in a room with my parents and Bill Gothard, and Bill Gothard almost gleefully asking my father what caused him to abuse a minor, and listening with rapt attention. Like, that's a sour one for me.
You win.
Yeah, you win for sure.
Thanks.
Yeah.
Childhood trauma.
Wow. On the heels of that, what was the hardest lesson that you learned?
That almost everything I had been raised to believe was a lie. Not just wrong, but was a focused, constructed lie.
Yeah.
But it was also the most freeing thing I ever learned.
Yeah. I'm still walking a lot of that, but I would agree as well that just accepting that maybe what you've known as your truth, you know, is anything but. And when it's the fabric of your existence, that's a little bit, you know, death-defying.
I could only imagine. And we're going to end it on a positive.
Yay!
By me asking you guys the most positive takeaway from IBLP.
Can we say the most positive takeaway from IBLP or from the documentary?
Because the most positive takeaway from the whole experience. You choose.
There we go. Perfect. Okay. Go for it.
Oh, I have to go first.
Sure. You threw it on me the last one.
I'm going to cheat and answer twice.
Okay.
One of my fondest memories, not yet deconstructed from the religious trauma, but firmly outside of IBLP's grasp, was walking into a training center with this hot young thing on my arm and being very flaunty and flirty.
I sat on his lap right in the middle of the lobby.
The lobby, yeah. Mm-hmm. We almost got kicked out, but not quite.
Yeah, they were circling. Yeah.
That was a lot of
fun. I have a picture of it.
Yeah. But I think the best thing that came out of this was seeing all of this darkness exposed, and people finally, it feels like for me, people are finally seeing it for what I've seen all of these years, the validation and the outpouring of support and just hopefully helping to kill it. I think it's been the best part for me.
I think the best part for me is the fact that while I wasn't, you know, raised in the clutches of IBLP, that I was raised enough within Christian fundamentalism that day that I walked into Walmart, I looked like enough of a homeschooler that this one recognized it, and we could spend the next, you know, few years of our lives surviving, but also being married and with my best friend.
Ultimately thriving.
Yes. And my son and, you know, this, my entire little family right here, as a result of being a geeky, nerdy little homeschooler.
Enough overlap.
Yes.
I will say that you guys are the cutest. Thought you were the cutest in the documentary. But anybody listening, you need to get you a person who looks at each other. Like, they look at each other. I can't even explain the way that they look at each other. It is the most adorable, darling, hope-inducing thing in the name of love I've ever seen.
I feel so bad for all y'all. If this is the standard, dear God.
You know what it is? It's the survival, though. I think it's, you know, I can sit here 18 years into this and go, we've been through hell. We saw hell. We're back. And I can sit here and be more in love with this man than the day that I married him. So it's just,
there's a lot of gratitude.
Yes.
In both of us.
Seeing someone's humanness and loving them because of it, not like in spite of it. Like, that's.
And that ultimately, that was the message that Christ came to give. It was the one we were supposed to take away.
And never got. Yeah.
Wow.
Sorry to get religious at the end. But.
No. Hey, it works. Yeah. Thank you both so much.
Thank you so much.
This has been
amazing.
Yes. Yes. Very, very fun.
Thank you so much for listening to Life After MLM. Don't forget to like, subscribe, and share. And follow us on social media at Life After MLM Podcast and my advocacy at The Real Roberta Blevins. You can find all of the links to the social accounts in our show notes. And if you just listened to that incredible story and you thought, oh my God, I have a story just like that that needs to be told, hit me up, therealrobertablevins@gmail.com. I would love to have you on the show to share your story and start your journey in life after MLM. See you next time, Huns.